At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom. When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, joining us right now. I know you're sitting there in the green room watching this. What's your thoughts on Wendy asking the kids to call her boyfriend, Jeff Lacoste, who's been testifying against her, daddy, when they really weren't at that point in the relationship?
I think it's probably multiple things. You guys have all had good points that make perfect sense. The other aspect of it, I think there can be this element of dominance and control that she's in charge and she gets to decide these mm-hmm. things. But yeah, trying to create, here's our idyllic new life and here's your new dad, and this one is better than the other one. So, you know, incredibly toxic thinking on her part, but that's not a surprise coming out of this family.
No, not at all. And I guess I would say probably not unexpected out of Wendy, because if you look at Wendy's path and her life and her grooming and her upbringing and all that from Donna, she didn't really enter adult life and doesn't seem to operate adult life understanding that she has a lot of agency in her life. So nor would I expect her to understand or think that children, her own children, have a lot of agency as well, because she doesn't have it. Why would they have it? And if I simply ask them or tell them that they have to call this man dad, well, they're going to have to do it because I'm mom. Why let them come to that conclusion, or why let them come to that term on their own, which would be probably the much healthier thing to do if they ever get there, which they don't have to be. It shouldn't be for the parents to be concerned of what label are you going to give me? You must call me dad, especially when dad is still in existence. I've heard so many parents, and I've seen borderlines firsthand that like to go, you can call him your bonus dad. You mean the guy you just met last week at the gas station? He's bonus dad? And everybody should just go along with his bullshit? That I've seen. And it has nothing to do with the kids feeling comfortable. It has everything to do with the narcissist and the borderline going and saying, oh, okay, this makes me feel better.
Yeah, that's the thing you see with certain personality types, personality disorders, borderline narcissist. It's always about how can I use these kids to meet my needs, even though externally it looks like we're a loving, close-knit, wonderful family, but the kids end up being in the middle and they end up being used to serve what the parent wants. And it's a really toxic environment for kids.
Yeah, I mean, it ends up just being all about it's all about image at the end of the day with a lot of these folks.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how that image is conjured up in other people's minds. As long as at the end of the day, that's what the general public is seeing when they look at you. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
And gosh, like it seems like no regard. I mean, obviously she has grandma joking about dressing the kids up like Nazis. She wants to move the kids away from dad. You know, it feels... I mean, obviously we can't diagnose, we can't judge. I mean, this is just pure speculation and just pure conjecture. Does Wendy have a lot of care for these children, her own kids? I mean, if she's willing to let this, let's say that she did know that this was going to happen. Let's say that she did know that something was going to happen to dad and the kids love dad, and or even that mom wanted to move him away. Let's say he survived. Is there a lot of care there for the kids, or does it go back to I'm more concerned about what mom wants and the repercussions for that, or I'm more concerned about what I want because that's the only guide I have in life is showing me, well, it has to be about what she wants, so I'm mom here. It should be about what I want. Was she repeating the cycle in some sort of ways to her own children, you know, who were very, very young at the moment?
It's love is such an interesting term, right? Did she love these kids if that's the way it went down? And I think folks with a certain personality type, they have very, very strong attachments with their kids, but they look through this distorted lens. It's always about, you know, seeing their own reflection through the kids. And so they care about them in a very intense way, but it's a bit twisted. It's looking through a strange filter because it's always about, as you say, loyalty to the family and what looks good to everyone else. And it's sort of like they can't take that filter off.
Well, and the kids are almost a utility for them. They're a means to an end. They can use them to manipulate other people.
Yes.
Does that seem right?
100%, 100%. And it's really sad when you see folks like this in therapy. I mean, you just get these extreme cases where it's clear that these kids were born to meet the parents' needs, and they're consistently put in this bind where their needs don't matter. Their needs aren't even recognized, and it messes them up.
Yeah.
It's the attachment that parent has to their kids that they define as love. And I believe Wendy does probably look at her children and go, I love them. I care. Sure. Her definition of love is so probably messed up because of mom and what she had demonstrated to her of what love is. And that's fully ingrained in Wendy by this point. Could she, as an adult, wake up and go, my definition of love needs to change? And maybe, hopefully she is. Hopefully she's seeing that what I was brought up with mom is not what I thought it was, and makes that change. But if you never do, then you never do. So that love, that attachment that equals love, comes at the expense of the emotions of the kids, no matter what. And because the kids, and I think they see it that way so often because the kids can't vocally express themselves in a clear, concise way because they're children, that it's, oh, they're fine. They're resilient. They can deal with it until, you know, they're a bit older and then in therapy trying to unpack the nightmare that they've been brought up around.
Yeah. Why am I in college with my mother trying to dictate everything about my life and what I major in and whether I do the homework the way she wants me to do? And she calls me every day. It's clearly about mom. It's it's not letting them be their own person. And and that comes up a lot. If you work with college students, you get these parents that are just, you are to be the reflection of what I want you to be, with no recognition that your kid is a separate person.
When you see that in college kids, and that's the world that they were brought up in, when they try to push back and they try to gain some independence, some autonomy, what does that ever work out? Or is that usually the breaking point of if they truly follow that and they say, I am going to be my own self. I have my own agency. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And I'm going to change this dynamic here. Is that kind of the beginning of the end for that relationship with mom? Is it, and basically the rest of life, you now are going to have the passive aggressive mom who will be like that until she dies, because that's just how they're programmed, and you have to sit there and go, well, I'm going to stick with this and not let this affect me because I don't need to. Do they ever turn around? Is there ever a Donna that goes, you know what? You're right. You are independent. I was seeing this wrong my entire life of manipulating you.
It's a toss up. I think the relationship does not have to end, although sometimes it does. Those are the ones we always talk about, the ones that move across the country and block the parents' phone number. But often they can learn how to set boundaries and then tolerate and maneuver around the manipulations of the parent. And sometimes you can get the parent to come in and do some family therapy where you can really be pretty direct and coach them, and the parents can start to get it at least a little bit. And even though they want to keep spouting off with their attempts to control and dominate, they can learn to button up. And, you know, you have to say, look, if you want a relationship with your kid, you're going to have to relate to them differently now.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like they have to do a lot of work on themselves before they can have this relationship with their kids.
Yeah. Yeah. If they want a more positive relationship, they do need to do that. And do most of them want to do that? No, not really. But sometimes they can be coached. Look, even if you don't agree with the things your kid's doing, it makes you, you know, you're grinding your teeth over there. If you want them to stay in contact with you, you've got to learn to let them be their own person.
Good luck.
Are the parents acting at that point? I mean, is it, I mean, I think if you're the kid, you might be able to see through that too, going, wait a second, like, everything is very surface. You really can't go into super deep topics because it sets them off or gets them into their old mode.
Yeah.
And you just kind of really gotta, you know, walk it on the surface if you want to have any type of relationship there. Because I don't know. I feel like a lot of those parents that, okay, even if they did kind of get their stuff in order to go, okay, I want to do this, can they ever really dive into that and believe in it if that's not who they are?
It's a tough one. You know, it's a tough one. They can learn, as you say, are they acting? They can learn how to act in a way where they have to take a deep breath and go, okay, this is not what I'm feeling, but I'm going to do what the therapist has told me is the right thing to do here. And sometimes they'll come into therapy and confess, I did what you told me not to do this week. Mm-hmm. I blew it. You know, which is a good sign if they can self-monitor that way. So every case is different. You do your best. And sometimes people just learn, I can stand about a 2-hour visit once or twice a year back at the family home. I go for Thanksgiving and I leave after a couple hours because I've got somewhere else important to be.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you have to kind of dose parents sometimes.
Where do you got to go? Anywhere but here.
Yeah, exactly.
Anywhere. Yeah. Anywhere but here. I want to jump into some of the divorce back and forth between Dan Markell while he was alive and Wendy Adelson. And I want to context what we're going to go into here. This is based on Dan Markell's 2014 family court filings in Adelson v. Markell. It was filed in Leon County, Florida. Everything we're about to describe here comes from Dan's sworn motions and memoranda. These are allegations he made. They were never adjudicated by a court because hearings were postponed and Dan was eventually killed before they could actually be heard. So nothing here should be taken as established fact or judicial finding. This is, like I said, this is how I would express it, is how Dan saw Wendy, at least legally, on paper, because these were filings that were made. So understand that as we go into this conversation, everybody. When we take a look at the filings, there's a lot in there. There's a lot of things that he points out of Wendy's behavior. And again, it's allegations. So we got to take them at that. But we're going to assume the allegations are true for the sake of the conversation. But they are just allegations. When you look at Dan Markell's filings against Wendy, what you see is more than just legal paperwork. It's a father documenting point by point the ways he felt shut out of the children's lives and deceived financially. We're talking about everything from blocked phone calls and alienation to hidden bank accounts, misreported income, and even something that's listed in these documents that's called a Holocaust family ring.
Oh, my God.
As symbolic as that, that he claims and alleges she refused to return to him and his family after swearing under oath that she would. I mean, taken together, if all of it's true, it paints a picture of obstruction, control, and manipulation, behaviors that go beyond normal divorce conflict. And that's where I want to start here as we go into this part of the conversation with Siobhan, because these are pretty dark allegations. It gets very dark. So let's walk through these issues one by one and kind of unpack this. Let's start out. When you go through the filings, one of the very first things that jumps out is how little contact he said he was given with his kids when he was supposed to be able to have it. He documented that over a span of 3 months, he had 25 minutes of Skype time, like combined. When they were not around. That was the times that they communicated was via Skype, not via phone, from what we understand. Not a slip up. Seems like a deliberate shrinking of a parent's presence. I mean, to him, it was proof that Wendy was treating communication not as a lifeline, but as an intrusion, basically, into her life. I mean, what does it do to a child's bond when one parent is consistently cutting down the other's ability to communicate with them?
Well, divorce is always, nearly always, stressful for kids. And in the short term, most will have confusion and anxiety. But there's about 25% who have ongoing, pretty extreme problems from it. And that has everything to do with the level of conflict between the parents. Kids need consistent contact with both parents, if it's a healthy enough person, you know?
Yeah, if it's a healthy enough person.
If it's a healthy enough person, they need consistent contact. And the level of conflict has a direct correlation with how, and I'd say causation, with how well kids can adjust. And over time, the majority of kids in a normal situation can thrive and they are resilient and they do okay. But it's those 25% where this really toxic behavior and trying to alienate them and, you know, saying terrible things about the other parent, that's when we really worry. And surprisingly, a lot of very well-educated people who seem intelligent externally engage in behavior like that. So that's what you're describing.
It wasn't just the calls that were scarce here. After there were those issues, Danny allegedly talked to a parenting coordinator. They both had to with the court, allegedly. And the parenting coordinator had a solution for this, because a lot of these problems are fairly simple to solve if the parents can be grown-ups and do what they're supposed to do. There was a daily call time set up between 6 and 7 p.m. That's what was the solution to make it very simple. Dan, in his filing, said Wendy ignored that order, especially when the kids were with her. So even court-backed rules were treated as pretty much optional, according to Dan. Does that surprise you at all that someone, if this is true, that would have been brought up in a home like this with Donna as mom and Wendy as daughter, that they would find whatever the court says if they had agreed with Dad, that they feel that those decisions are truly optional?
No, it's unfortunate. And in this kind of incredibly hostile, contentious divorce, you see that a lot. And the court is not very good at following up on these kind of cases. So people get away with a lot. The courts are overwhelmed and burdened, as it seems like so many things are. And I think the courts can be easily manipulated. And people come in with, this is what happened. And the other one says, no, it's not. And fortunately, we have parenting coordinators now who generally are some kind of therapist who can monitor this. And often parents even have to communicate with each other through software that goes through the parenting coordinator, right? So they're not emailing each other directly. Yeah. And they document, which again, what a way to have to live when you'd like to feel that you can parent together, because that's what the kids need. And the kids need that sense that their parents are a team in order to feel secure about themselves. But this kind of thing sets up this divided loyalty where the kids always are in this position. Well, whose side am I supposed to be on here today?
Yeah. Well, and what does that do to a child as they enter into their teen years and then adult years? How does this set them up for the future? I mean, the answer is obvious, but are there patterns that you see with kids who come from these relationships?
One of the problems is that if one parent succeeds in truly alienating the other, the kids feel abandoned and they don't realize, you know, all the other factors that were going on. And they tend to blame themselves for being abandoned. And that is incredibly sad. And that's something that they may not work out until they get to be, you know, in their 20s is often when people can unpack what really went on and what was mom saying and what was real and what wasn't. And often, you know, when they're over 18 and they can get out from under these kind of control dynamics that are going on in the family, they can have a more adult to adult relationship with the parent and hear the other side of the story. You know, I mean, I've seen parents where, let's say dad is pushed out of the kids' lives and he sends them cards in the mail. He sends them letters because everything's always interfered with by mom. And it can go the other way too. But the parent steals the letters and takes them. So the kids never see them. That actually, this is a personal thing that happened to my husband. His mother was abused and kind of forced to leave the kids behind when he was a little boy. And it turned out the mother sent the kids letters all the time. And they didn't know about it until they were adults and found this box full of letters from the mother. And so how did it affect them? Tremendously. They felt abandoned and unloved when that really wasn't the case. The mom had been domestically abused. And, you know, did it impact the development? I can say it definitely impacted the development of my husband. And then a lot of anger at his father when he found out that this is what had happened.
It happens the other way too, though. And I know you're aware of that too, where I would say I've seen it where the letters come and the child reads them and there's manipulation and it's resetting history, or it's trying to change the narrative of what life was, because one can't deal with the repercussions for what they've done, or really own up to anything of what they've done or recognize that it existed, which can work in the opposite way, as well. But obviously the situation you're talking about there is someone that's controlling it for the wrong reasons.
For the wrong reasons. Yeah. 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 Really excellent point. Thank you for making that, because if you have a really, we'll just say, psychologically unwell and unstable parent, they continue to try to use the kids, they manipulate the kids, and sometimes those, if we'll use the cards and letters as an example, even phone calls, it's all about them and all about manipulation. And that's incredibly toxic. These cases are, they're kind of hell for therapists. You know, when I quit working with kids in the 90s, for all those reasons I've talked about before, I'll work with college age kids, but I don't see a lot of little kids, because 9 out of 10 times kids are in therapy for these kind of problems, the post-divorce conflict. And it's really hard to sort out. You have to spend a lot of time and look at all the evidence, and people bring in the texts and, you know, the cards, and you have to really sort out what's going on. And sometimes that's the thing where all communication has to go through the parenting coordinator, or phone calls have to be monitored where there's actually a social worker on the line with the phone call, because they have to be able to interrupt when the parent is saying something inappropriate. They have to redirect. And these cases are so difficult and so messy. And yes, there's a lot of variables.
God, that's sad. That is so incredibly sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is. And disturbing that adults don't see the damage that they're doing. When going through some of these things, the marital settlement agreement also gave each parent what's called the right of first refusal. What it basically means is that if one parent can't be with the kids, if the other person is, you know, locally available, that person would have the first right to watch the kids. So like, I got to go do something. Any world, sometimes like, oh, grandma and grandpa, babysitter, whatever. But in this case, it would be, well, I'm going to contact my ex because they have the right of first refusal. He claims she consistently ignored that, leaving them with others based on flexibility. Oftentimes it was with grandma. Let's talk about that for a little bit. And honestly, from both sides here, from your perspective, what does it do to children when they see one parent passed over, not because they're unavailable, but because the other parent, you know, won't allow it? Or sometimes, look, it's just more convenient because I may have to go all the way over town over here to get you there, and or they have to come here and, look, mom's right next door or something like that. I mean, sometimes I can see where it's like, do I have to run every single time they're free through you? I'm not speaking from personal experience here. I've never had to deal with this. I'm just looking at it going, okay, but I guess in a healthy relationship, there is more leeway and back and forth. But when you're in a really unhealthy relationship, it's very rigid.
Yeah. Yeah. It really causes the kids to equate parenting with conflict, and that every little thing is going to be a fight. And then that puts them into, whose side am I on? I'm thinking of one case where it was a case where there was parental alienation, but it was dad against mom. And the little boy could literally never say, and this was like a 4-year-old, 4 to 5, he could never say anything nice about mom in front of dad. And dad had ended up with primary custody because there was a lot of manipulation going on. And the kid just felt this divided loyalty all the time. And he could only win dad's approval by saying bad things about mom, just like dad did, and really messed him up. It was just so sad. And yeah, that one ended up being for years in court. And I don't know that it was ever resolved. I mean, the kid's going to be 18 and have to come to his own conclusion.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.